Thank you for those that read the literature, it's a very important part of the meeting. And now it's time for me to introduce the speaker, and I want to thank the alumni for letting me chair this meeting today and invite one of my friends that is in my network to share their story with us tonight. This gentleman I met when I first came into treatment, and he was here on the Sunday morning Crossroads meeting and has been ever since. Rarely do we not see him on a Sunday morning here for the Crossroads meeting. And he's been a friend of mine since day one, helped me chair the meetings in Crossroads, and just a real outgoing guy and about recovery, and shares his strength, hope, and experience. And he even let me put my name on the, my name is on the checks with his for the, since Crossroads is my home group, and that's a big step for me to have my name on the check. Anyway, I would like to introduce Renee H.
My name is Renee, and I'm a recovering alcoholic.
Amen.
And it's funny, God puts people in my path at the strangest times for the strangest reasons. Someone asked me, did I have a joke? And the other times I've told my story, I never told a joke. And so George told me a joke that Sam would approve of. It's not rude, crude, or sexist. Did you hear about the alcoholic who drank liquor? Anybody hear about him?
Lacker.
Oh, Lacker. Lacker. He died, but he's got a great finish. Now you know why I don't tell jokes. Also, God always, as I'm introducing my birthday, which is December 3rd, 1946, that had a very significant meaning in my life. It was, I think I had a little over a year, and I was reading through. I read my daily meditation is the silver daily reflections. Well, I was just thumbing through, wanted to see what my birthday. I couldn't remember what was on that page, December 3rd. So I flipped to that page, and it was a reading from the 12 and 12, and it was on page 346. And if you take one of the 12s from the 12 and 12 and put it in front of the page number, it's my exact birthday, 12-3-46. And I still get chills when I think about that. So there's a lot of things like that that God has provided me insight into. And again, as I said, I was born in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and had no horror stories as a child. My mom didn't drink. My dad had a few beers. He was in the Marines, and he was sort of a rough type guy. And it really didn't, alcohol didn't come into my life because until after I graduated from high school. Because in Rhode Island, at least, you know, to get a six-pack of beer, not a case, not a bottle of liquor, but a six-pack of beer, I mean, you had to have an older brother. That was about the only other way you were going to get it. So I didn't drink that much in high school. I grew up, and then my parents, after graduation, my parents moved to Florida, and I went to University of Texas freshman year, and then did a fair amount of partying. I don't know whether I was trying to be an adult, and I saw all the adults drinking and doing all types of things, but I tied a good one on right from the beginning. But it wasn't monumental till I went to my first fraternity party. And my date for that night was the same date I've got tonight. I hate to say it, we never made it to my first fraternity party. I was driving a little sports car at the time, and I remember leaving the dorm after polishing, and some of you don't even know what a pony is, but it's an itty-bitty can of Colt 45. And I polished a few of those off in J.W. Dant and a few other things. And I thought nothing of driving drunk. Luckily, I never hit anything. But I pulled up to her off-campus housing, and she heard the motor stop, and she got her purse and got ready. 5 minutes goes by, and no Renee, so she looks out the door, and here comes Renee, not stumbling, crawling up the sidewalk. Because I had, and this is a little MGA, so it's like that far off the ground, because I didn't hurt anything, but when I opened the door and tried to get out, everything went out except my feet. And I was literally, and I don't know why I didn't get run over, but I was literally lying on the ground with my feet still in the car. And I don't know how, let me break this first. I don't know how. Oh, okay. Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. Let me hold on to this podium. I mean, that's the way I was going to be at the end of it anyways. But I had literally just somehow picked myself up and was crawling up. And by the time I got to the front porch, I lost breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And she had enough sense to call one of my sober friends. I think he was majoring in criminology, so maybe those people stay sober. But so he came and got me and drove me back to the dorm. And so my great drinking career got off to a great start with actions like that. But I never got in trouble. I don't know why. And I guess sometimes now I wish I had. And it's funny when I'm so glad that we don't forget the past, because I want to remember crawling up those steps and, you know, missing my first fraternity party. I mean, that was a big deal, but I still went back the following weekend and, you know, partied hardy and all of that. I didn't learn my lesson. And luckily, I did make it through college. And the interesting thing, of course, liquor was part of my everyday activities. And in June, it'll be 36 years we've been married. So I'm of the old school. I promised, I actually asked my father-in-law for her hand in marriage. But then my mother-in-law came across and gave me all the rules about you don't get married before graduation. So of course we graduated on Thursday night at 7:30 and got married Friday morning at 10:30. But the interesting part about that Friday morning, I was staying at my best man's place. That day, or that morning, I didn't have a nice little breakfast. I had scotch out of a test tube. That's the way he used to keep his stash of scotch. And thank heavens, let me know if he attacks for the moment. I really didn't, luckily, drink enough to mess up the wedding and the whole nine yards and all of that. And the ironic part, maybe God was trying to tell me something about my wedding, because my wife was interning in West Palm Beach for finishing up her teaching degree. And I actually had to plan my wedding. Cake, flowers, auditorium, everything. A little higher, please. Does that, anybody have any bee stain remover? I only had to pay her $50 to do that. So, this is how to lose your train of thought. No, my wedding. But what was nice about it, and maybe God was trying to tell me something, we had it at the Catholic Student Center, which was university property. Well, you couldn't have liquor there. So my reception and wedding, other than my breakfast that morning, was minus alcohol. And again, somebody was trying to tell me something, but of course, I wasn't listening. So we proceeded to move to Massachusetts, and set up housekeeping and we had some great times and so forth. But I guess every time we probably had an argument, it was because I was looped and couldn't understand English very well. And somehow we stayed together and had three children. Then we moved back to Florida. And again, the drinking was, I guess the only way I can put it is worse. Because the company I worked for, every Friday night, the president would have an open bar in his office. So that definitely didn't solve anything. And I guess the one thing that sticks in my mind over all of these instances and situations is I had no idea that alcohol was causing any problems. I just thought, it made me do crazy things. It's like I used to have to be the life of the party. I had to tell the crudest jokes, the sexist jokes. The skinny lady walks in, I'll tell a joke about her. The fat guy walks in, I'll tell one about him. The bald guy walks in, I'll tell one about him. I think just to be the life of the party, if somebody came in a wheelchair, I'd probably told a joke about a wheelchair. And that's how my ego was really in control of me. That I had to be. It wasn't, okay, tonight you're not going to be the life of the party. I had to be the life of the party. And I chalked that up to the beginnings, I guess, of obsession. Because I didn't feel like I had a good time unless I was the life of the party. And now it's very interesting to go to a party, not drink, and sit back and watch the fact that I always thought they were laughing with me, and now I watch the fact that they're laughing at the life of the party. So it's that's why I say I'm glad I don't forget the past. So after a few job changes that were for the better, we ended up moving with a company to Atlanta. And that company had legal problems and whatever, but I ended up having a few other positions around town. I like to say I was controller of everything, and I really mean everything. Let's see, there was Rollins Incorporated, Cousins Properties, Equitable Real Estate, Cheatham Hill Memorial Cemetery, and then while we put them in the graves, you had to play before, so I was controller of Montasia Golf Facilities. And the list goes on and on. And I don't know whether half of those jobs I lost because I was drinking. I think I probably lost 80% because I was drinking. And yet, again, it doesn't register that alcohol was the problem. Because that damn ego, was making me put what I call self-induced stress on myself. Every day, I would make up, and I have to laugh, because I would make up to-do lists with 25 items on it. Now, we all know, there's nobody in hell that's going to do 25 items, even if only half are really important. So now I tend to do two things. One, my sponsor has me do a to-done list. It's like I tell my sponsorees on Friday when they start saying what they're going to do for the weekend. Don't tell me today what you're going to do. Tell me on Monday what you did. So with these crazy to-do lists, I was having self-induced stress day in and day out. And the way I thought I could handle that was to pour more booze in me. I would drink going to work. I would drink at noontime. I would drink coming home. Cadillac Sevilles have beautiful little spare tire covers because they got a zipper in them. And you put styrofoam in there to keep it cold or hide it. And then, of course, things got to the point where I'd find and I thought they were unique hiding places, like in the toilet, you know, and then I found out everybody hid it in the toilet. And what's funny about the time that all these jobs and all, we're still here in Atlanta, same house and everything, and I guess I thought nobody knew. And yet, now I find out everybody knew. Literally everybody, every neighbor that I went to those parties with, I mean, bosses, you know, I mean, but most of them wouldn't tell me. So today I try to make short to-do lists, I guess the rigorous honesty of this program is what makes my to-do list good or bad. I don't know why, but, and I've heard other people say they do it too, that we, and I guess it's one of our human traits, put the things we like to do towards the top five. We've got 10 things. The top five are really probably going to be what we want to do. Maybe six is number one, what should have been number one, maybe is number six, and we'd handle it that way. So I have to be rigorously honest now when I think about the way I used to do and set up my priorities for what I'm going to do each day. Now, we talk about the Alumni Association and all the things that they do, but I get a little freaked out around Halloween. Because that was my last night drinking. My wife had set up, I didn't realize it, I guess she had told me, but of course it went in one ear and out the other, that I had an evaluation on November 1st. But before, and that's a whole great experience, but Halloween, I had the fire department, the rescue team there, you know, just everybody. And of course, my daughters are driving up. They think I've had a heart attack or something. And I'm telling them, you know, I'm okay and so forth. And I somehow convinced them, or I just wouldn't go. They didn't take me to the hospital or nothing that night. And I think I just sort of fell asleep drunk anyways. So that was the last horrible evening that I've had in over 7 years. And then the ride to Ridgeview. Well, first of all, I thought Smyrna was halfway to Birmingham. We lived over in East Cobb. And, you know, so coming here, I wanted to pack a lunch and all of that. So we drive. I got a to Friday, I remember day everything. Friday at 1 o'clock was my evaluation. And we drove here, and I think my skin was gray by that time. I hadn't worked in over a year or two. My health was, I mean, I'm surprised that they didn't take me away the night before. And I actually hyperventilated twice. I had to have her stop twice, so that I could just get out of the car and stand up and breathe. maybe that was God sort of telling me what was coming. Because I came in that Friday, and of course, I checked off all the options at Club Med I wanted to participate in. Well, I thought I was going to do that and then go home and evaluate myself over the weekend, and then if I wanted to, come back Monday. Well, I was in, for me at that time, Cottage B was the detox. So I was in detox by 3 p.m. And it's funny, it was 6 weeks or 7 weeks later that we had to sign weekly evaluations, because I remembered when I signed that first evaluation how I could hardly read my own writing. I mean, I was that weak, I was that screwed up. And about 6 weeks later, we had to sign our caseworker, our therapist would make us sign an evaluation each week. And I signed my name. I said, shit, that's my signature 15 years ago. I could read it, and I asked him, I said, you got the original evaluations that we signed when we came? He said, yeah, and luckily at that time they were in, I was in Cottage E, which was my halfway house, and they changed it, it was the Alzheimer's now, because I had to reserve my room before I forgot, but the... luckily, the records were there that evening, and I went, and he showed me my original evaluation, and it was a signature of a dead man. It really was, and he allowed me to make a copy of that with the copy of the one I just signed next to each other, and it's unbelievable, the difference. And for some reason, God must not want me to show that to anybody. He hasn't struck me down when I tell it, but I still have 5 or 6 of those copies in my desk drawer, and I don't carry one around in my wallet. And maybe that's God just wanting me not to inflate my ego too much with that. But it was just so interesting to me in 6 weeks how this place changed me. And it was a hell of a 6 weeks. First week, of course, I was in detox for a week. Of course, I thought they could cure me by Friday. So I was a little agitated to the point of screaming and swearing. And when I found out that Friday that they had this thing called a halfway house. And my wife had enough sense about her when they said, hey, Renee's coming home. She called everybody she could and said, he may be leaving there, but he ain't coming home. So luckily, the insurance paid, and they got me into the halfway house, which was a whole new experience, because I celebrated my 50th birthday in a halfway house. And the birthday was okay. I mean, Mary brought cake up, and I shared it with everybody there and all of that. But by 50, I thought, even then, in early treatment, that, you know, I just knew everything. That was just a fact. So there was and for the life of me, I've heard her last name before, but of course in this program, all I've learned is first names. But her name was Susan, and she'd been there forever. You know, her and Moses went through here in the beginning. But she was, she cracked the whip. And one time, and I can't to this day can't even remember what they were arguing or what we were arguing about, but I wasn't winning. And I went back to my room and I held the sink, and I was talking to the damn mirror. And I held the sink so tight that I pulled, I don't know what big muscle is in your back that goes all the way up to your shoulder, but I pulled something from squeezing so hard. And that was God telling me that it wasn't a good thing to talk to yourself in front of a mirror, because for the next month, I did not sleep a full night. I'd wake up, if I turned a certain way, I would wake up. And I look back now, I didn't realize it was God talking to me then, but I know it was now. Because I just was still, my ego was just flaming full force on everything. I hated those community group meetings where they tell you all the rules. They tell you all the rules you broke. I just never did like those meetings, you know. But again, like everything else, I had to just change my habits and do what I was supposed to do and listen. And then by the end of the last 2 weeks, I didn't want to leave the halfway house. I loved Susan. She had saved my ass. There's one other time that she did for me what I couldn't do for myself. And to show you how powerful the word help is. Of course, now that I was sober, I figured out, shit, I better get a job. So I'm in the halfway house in the evening program, which allowed me to interview during the daytime. The only problem is running a reception and a return call environment from payphones is not the most fun in the world, because you didn't want to answer Ridgeview. they just didn't quite understand yet. But and I used to do this like on Monday mornings. I'd read the paper Sunday and circle who I was going to call, and I'd call them. You know, and of course, if you're talking to a VP of finance, you're probably not going to, he's not going to answer the phone. So I'd have to leave a message and wait for a call back. And well, one of the great rules, and of course I didn't quite understand it at the time, came out that nobody could be in a halfway house in the mornings, including me. And I said, well, where am I going to go? Down to Quick Trip and use their payphones? And I talked to my therapist, and he said, had you actually asked, just simply asked Susan for help? I said, no. Of course, my ego is saying, what the hell you want to ask her for? I went to ask her. I explained the situation, why I was using the payphones the way that I was. And within 4 hours, and she talked, Elizabeth, I think, was her boss at that time, and I don't know if she's still around, but within 4 hours, in Cottage E, there was this room way in the back, believe it or not, that had a desk, a chair, a phone, and a ceiling light worked. And the phone did not go through the switchboard. I don't know how that happened, but they allowed that to be my office. It was real unofficial. But I would sit there and call people in all Monday mornings, Tuesday mornings, and sometimes Wednesdays. I'd wait for phone calls to come back. And I knew it didn't go through the switchboard, and I knew it didn't it just no way they could know that was a Ridgeview phone. So the power of help, and that's why one of the things I was going to mention is I used to pray real detailed prayers in early recovery. And my sponsor said, you know, why don't you, first of all, just do the second half of the 11th step. Pray only for the knowledge of his will and the power to carry it out. Well, I've gotten even shorter than that, because all I do is just say help. I really do. I know what I mean. God knows what I mean. God knows everybody I wanted to pray for. So I can't say I don't have time to pray anymore. So Ridgeview has been good to me. I didn't write the speech down, but I had to write the promises that have come true. And while I was driving earlier today, I was writing, because unfortunately I have many senior moments, and I'll think of something that I had experienced. Because again, and I've got to say it tonight, because I say it at every chance I get. if anything that I have said sounds like advice, run the other way. I share experiences. That's all I can share with y'all. But some of the interesting things, you know, we talk about first, like my first job out of recovery was in a warehouse. We always talk about, well, people waiting around for, again, vice president of finance positions, and people wouldn't take flipping burgers, you know. And mine was in a warehouse for, I think it was $8.81 an hour. And then it got better. But I had to have patience, which is something I don't have even today, but I got to keep working on it. God also works at the whole recovery center. They have Alkathons on holidays. And every 2 hours for 3 or 4 days, they have meetings. Well, first time I saw that, I said, that's pretty good. So I didn't sign up. And then a few more days went by, and I said, yeah, I got to do that. And a few more days went by, and there was only one time left when I actually signed up. It was 4 a.m. Some of the alumni have been to the whole's 4 a.m. meeting. And it proves to me that, you know, if I procrastinate, God is going to let me do what I want to do, but it may not be exactly in the way I want to do it. Other things that I've come across, things like DUIs. I had an acquaintance share a year or two ago that he only had 2 DUIs in 10 years. He was proud of that. I asked him how many times he had driven with one eye closed. Oh, he said thousands of times. Well, guess what? When I would drive with one eye closed, I was DUI. I just didn't get caught. One of the things that happened about a year and a half into the program, I was sitting before a crossroads meeting on my deck, having some coffee, and just, I probably reading that Daily Reflections book, and my wife came out, and we hadn't been talking about anything special about the program or anything that day or the day before, nothing special. And she just, good thing I don't get emotional. She said to me, did you ever think it could be this good? So for those of you who are struggling with it, the promises do come true. You just have to give it a chance. I find out that when I think of what I want to happen and when I want to happen, multiply it by 4. If I want it to happen in a month, it will happen in 4 months. So I have to be cognizant of the fact that if it's good for me, it will happen, but maybe not in my time frame. Also, God puts me in strange jobs. Some of the alumni have come up and paid their fines in Superior Court to me. I was responsible for all the cash bonds for DUIs. I mean, and I was very honest. When I filled out my application for Cobb County, they have a little box, and it's at the top of the page. This is alcoholism. And the first time that somebody I knew was going to review that, I was happy because I had checked it. Because I knew I couldn't lose the job because I had lied on my application. Now, I can only tell you that's what happened to me, and that was a good thing for me. And what's quite interesting is that when I switched from Superior Court to Magistrate Court, one of the first training sessions, which unfortunately lasted 10 months, was midnight to 8 a.m. in the warrant office, writing DUI warrant. Almost slipped, you can see how old I am, DWI. But so God has put me in all these places for a reason. the damn problem with that is he hasn't told me that reason yet. And that's why my sponsor has me believing that everything happens for a good reason, even death. But I'm not owed the right to know that reason. Thank you.
Thank you.
Story with us, and I hope that someone got something out of it. I know I did. I always get something out of it when you share with me.